I mean, I guess I go back to like, let's pretend that this is happening to you.
Yeah.
Who do you call?
I don't know.
Yeah, like it's probably.
Who are you going to call?
I set myself up for that. I'm Paige.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Spooky Science Sisters.
Hey there, I'm Tara.
And I'm Jessica, and together we co-host the podcast Three Spooked Girls.
If you love the paranormal
or murder,
join us on Mondays for full-length episodes where we discuss our favorite paranormal stories and true crime cases.
And join us again on Thursdays for our mini-sodes called Stabby Snippets, where we tell you all about true crimes happening in the news.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, wherever the hell else you listen to your pods at. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook by using the handle at Three Spooked Girls.
Come and hang out with us and get your spooky on while we scare the hell out of you.
Hello, you're listening to Spooky Science Sisters, a podcast where we present to you a science-based and probably very giggly discussion on all things strange and unusual.
In this episode, we are going back to our spooky paranormal roots, which is a great point, by the way, when you wrote this, to discuss a topic that was requested by one of our listeners, the Enfield I'm going to say that wrong about a million times this episode, the Enfield Poltergeist. But before we get to today's topic, we need to do something spooky. So Paige, did anything spooky happen to you in the last 2 weeks?
No, other than I think we might have a dog poltergeist because my dog has been a nightmare for the last couple weeks, and we can't ever, it maybe has been since she got back from the vet. It's unclear when it changed, but like She's always been kind of a nightmare, and it has just gotten so much worse these last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Did they change her medication?
No, and I'm sort of wondering if maybe we need to up it a little bit because she's been, I think she's had, this is, I don't know, you guys are going to learn all about my dog's health issues. She's been like sort of spacey lately, and we keep thinking she's like having a seizure, and then it sort of never really happens. So I'm wondering if maybe they're like mini seizures that she's having. Mm. So I don't know. I don't know, but she's been driving us crazy. So that's not my spooky thing, I guess. Somehow my dog is getting even more annoying.
Paige's dog's brain, no work good.
But what about you? Anything spooky?
I have three things.
Oh my God. Yeah, you have one or two of the things that I wanted to talk about, but you have it on your list, so I'm letting you take them.
Shut up. One is actually a spooky thing. So this was a couple weeks ago, and I think it happened before we recorded our last episode, but I forgot to say it, and then Paige reminded me in these notes. So great. But it finally happened where my toddler can now open doors by herself. And she was having trouble falling asleep one night. I had come into my office to work on editing an episode and had like my noise canceling headphones on. So like, I cannot hear anything that's going on. She managed to come all the way into the room. And like, before I noticed her, she's like standing by my right elbow. And I was like, whoa, kid.
I did that to Elliot today.
Yeah, to be fair, I've done that to Steven quite recently. But I like mostly kept it together because I didn't want to, you know, freak out and ruin her life. But she's kind of looked at me like, what is wrong with you, Mom? You scared me. So that's my something spooky. I'm sure it's going to happen about a million other times that, you know, middle of the night or whenever, she'll be right in front of my face. It's going to scare the bejesus out of me. Two other things. So, well, today, next couple days are big for a couple reasons. So first, it is Halloween in 2 days because we decided we celebrate April 30th. Yes. And it is April 28th right now. So yay for Halfween. I still have not decided what I want to watch.
I just want to remind everybody that 2 or 3 years ago, I thought I was like the most creative human being. I was like, oh, I'm going to start celebrating Halloween and like made this whole thing up. And apparently everyone else in the world was doing the exact same thing as me. But I like to pretend that it was my idea.
Yes. So there is like some sort of German holiday apparently called like Walpurgisnacht that basically coincides with Halloween. So, and sounds an awful lot like second Halloween.
Heck yeah. The Germans know.
The Germans know. And we are of German heritage. So I think we get to even more officially celebrate this holiday. The other big thing is that today is the 2 year anniversary of when our first episode came out.
Oh, I don't think I realized it was like today exactly.
It just occurred to me like 15 minutes ago. I knew it was coming up and then I like happened to check my Facebook memories and I was like, oh shit, that was today.
Holy moly.
Yep. And here we are still in a pandemic.
I was going to say, let's make this depressing because we started this because because we were locked down in COVID life and somehow 2 years later, we're still here.
Yeah, but who could have guessed? Now we live in the same city. We both have different jobs.
Yeah.
We
both have new houses.
Yep.
And so we're still here doing the spooky stuff.
Yeah.
We did it.
We did it. We've successfully kept this going for 2 years.
And what's really crazy is that on the 2 year anniversary, we're doing a poltergeist episode.
That is crazy.
That is crazy.
This really feels.
This feels right.
This feels like fate.
Yeah. So thank you, anonymous listener who recommended this.
This is our new official something spooky. Is our 2 year podiversary. And we are doing, we're like back to the early days, doing some debunking of a famous ghost story.
Look at us.
Look at us.
All right.
Okay. Let's do Enfield. Yay.
Yay. Okay. So if you've ever seen The Conjuring 2 movie, and I think there's actually a Steven Spielberg movie called The Poltergeist. That this is like
called Poltergeist? Yeah, you've never seen Poltergeist?
I don't think so. But apparently it's like,
good Lord.
Or I have and I just don't know I have, which is also possible.
It's a classic.
I've seen like 3 movies in the last couple of weeks where I've been like, oh, I actually already watched this. So it's possible I've seen it. But anyway.
The little girl staring at the TV and talking to it. You've at least seen that in like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I didn't know that this was apparently also loosely based off of
this? Very loosely based. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like Conjuring 2 was also very loosely based off of
I learned in researching this that movie was a total load of crap. Like even in the context of like, you know, we're going to talk about debunking the supernatural parts of this. Like the Warrens, I guess, Ed and Lorraine Warren were like there for like 24 hours and like went to the house once.
Wow.
And we're like, yep, it's a demon. And then that was that. But like the movie makes it seem like they were the heroes and like they were the only ones that believed the girl and all this stuff. And it's just ridiculous. And they totally left out the main investigator who spent 18 months with this family trying to figure out what was going on with them. So I don't know what the fuck that is about. But
great. Yeah. So they did a great job there.
Yeah. But apparently there's also like a mini series that aired on British television that has Matthew McFadden. Is it pronounced Fadden? I don't know.
Fadden is what I thought.
Fadden, Matthew McFadden. I don't know. I should know because like he's, you know, in one of my favorite movies, but oh, McFadden. Okay. Really?
Well,
okay. Well, fine. But apparently the British miniseries stars Matthew McFadden as Guy Lion Playfair. And I was like, well, I need to find it and watch it now. It's supposed to be really good. Hmm. So anyway, go.
Okay. So the story really revolves around Peggy Hodgson and her family. And the poltergeist or the supernatural activity is reported to start in 1977 from a house at 284 Green Street in Enfield, London.
And to that end, as we were starting to read more about this, I had always heard of the Enfield poltergeist as like the end all be all of poltergeist cases. And I went into this thinking that there would be really robust evidence. People would have things that they wouldn't have been able to disprove. Like you always hear people calling it, oh, the best documented poltergeist case. So like I thought this was going to have some really solid evidence. And then it was like, not really.
Yeah, I was under the exact same impression and then was highly disappointed to find out that, like, there's really not. Well, yeah, there's not much there.
Yeah. So by some estimations, there were up to or over 2,000 incidents that were logged and over 30 witnesses. So it like sort of seems like this phrase that they're trotting out that's like it's the best documented poltergeist case, as if somehow that makes it more credible, is a case of quantity over quality.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just because it's a very well documented doesn't mean that a lot of people didn't just get fooled by a couple of very clever little girls.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. You guys all knew where this was going. Okay. So where we wanted to start was, hey, with the basics of like, what is the difference between a poltergeist versus like just a ghost or just a haunting? And I guess the word poltergeist is derived from the German words, which we're back to the Germans. Hey, hey. But the German word poltern, which means to crash or bang about, and geist, which means ghost. And apparently the earliest reports of poltergeist activity date back to 530 AD. So people have been talking about them for a long time.
Yeah. And when people talk about poltergeists, they're typically talking about something that is tied to like a person or an object, whereas hauntings are more normally tied to like a specific location, a house or something like that. It's also worth noting that most poltergeists, and for that matter, most possession cases are centered around prepubescent or pubescent girls. So like basically, people are suddenly exposed. They're exposed. Suddenly exposed to teenage girl attitudes and are like, nah, this has to be supernatural. There's no way she's this mean on her own.
Yeah, I just figured that it's like parents and their kid is all of a sudden just like a real brat. Like, what happened to my sweet baby? And like, this is not normal. Like, this has to be the devil. Right.
I'm sure that's what my parents thought about me.
Yeah.
I didn't really think about, or I guess I never really noticed that there aren't really many like young boy poltergeist stories. I mean, I'm sure there are stories, but like,
we'll talk about one when we get to the debunking phase of this. But yeah, most of them are girls.
Little so, bratty girls.
Girls go a little bit crazy.
I got grounded once because my dad told me I was acting like Angelica. So
that's fine. I wasn't even allowed to watch TV shows like that because I would like start acting like the characters and get in trouble. So we were both equally nightmares. Okay. Well, okay. So, and I wanted to just touch on the like poltergeist versus ghost or versus regular old haunting, because I feel like it's not really clear to me that like, yes, this entity or whatever they call it, like the thing or the entity throws things around and you know, is, I guess, behaves like a poltergeist. But then there's tons of evidence where the main girl involved is saying that she is like speaking as a specific ghost of a person who died in the house. So it's like, well, wouldn't that make it a haunting then? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe it's just like the poltergeist knows that the person died in the house and then is like,
yeah,
feeding her the information.
That seems like, yeah, I don't know.
putting aside our skepticism, I guess that's how you'd explain that.
Yeah.
Okay, so who are our players here?
Yes. Paige. So Peggy. Peggy is a single mother of four children, Billy, Johnny, Janet, and Margaret, ages 7, 10, 11, and 12, respectively. And Janet's going to be where everything's, where all this stuff sort of centers. It's all going to be centered, yes, around her. But so they as a family move into this Green Street house in 1977.
Yes. And it is important to note here that Peggy was recently divorced. It was not amicable. And a couple of sources actually said that their dad had a new girlfriend that he was bringing around. And he dropped off his child support payments, which is like fucking rude. So, you know, this family is going through some stuff. And that's sort of like another feature of poltergeist stories. So like you have a lot of them centering around girls sort of like close to or having recently entering puberty, and then also people who have experienced like some big turnover in their life. And it's like, I think a lot of people see that as like, oh, the ghosts are like attracted to negative energy. But to me, it's just like, well, it just sort of feels like you're setting up a perfect scenario for just like weird stuff to happen, or like the kids to mess around because they're upset.
Yeah. Well, nothing else. Yeah. Just to find something to like focus.
Right.
Their negative energy on.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So Peggy, like I said, she reports that the paranormal activity begins very shortly after they move into the house. And when it first starts happening, the kids are complaining of waking up in the middle of the night to noises that they describe as knocking inside of the walls. And this is like stereotypical, like, I mean, every scary movie involving some sort of haunting, like this is how it starts, right?
Yeah. Although to be fair, they probably got it from stories about like this.
Right. Oh, well, yeah. Or did this get it from other stories?
Dun, dun, dun. We'll find out.
And so initially, you know, I think like most parents would, Peggy assumes it was nothing more than the sound of an old home settling, until she says that the activity starts to ramp up. And the first time she really starts to believe it is Janet and Margaret. Potentially Johnny may have been involved.
Yeah, I saw something where they said like Johnny would sometimes share a bed with Janet. So okay, it's possible that he was like in bed with her when this happened.
Got it. And they're like upstairs in their room and they claim that their beds are shaking.
Yeah.
One night, Peggy also reports that she hears some loud sounds coming from the girls' room. And when she goes upstairs to check on them, they tell her that their cabinets had moved on their own. And she initially is like, you guys are just being silly. That didn't happen. Until she reportedly sees it for herself that night.
Yeah. So the cabinet like actually moves in front of Peggy. Supposedly.
So what does Peggy do when she sees the cabinets moving and these things start happening? Well, she calls the police. And every single time I read stories like this, I always find it sort of funny that everybody calls the police. And like, I suppose there really isn't an easy guide explaining what to do if your furniture starts sliding itself across the room. But like, what do people think the police are going to do?
Right. Well, yeah, that's a common theme. But also when we did like the Black Eyed Children episode, and like the common theme of those stories was like, I went and grabbed my gun. And it's like,
and you're just going to shoot this kid?
There's a weird kid standing on your porch. Like, that's your first reaction. Yeah, I know. The police is sort of a weird decision to make, especially knowing that they're living. So the house that they're living in, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a bit, is called council housing. So it is government housing, like they're being supported by the government and she's getting child support from her ex-husband. So it's like, I just feel like, couldn't they have called like a housing representative or something to talk to? I don't know. It's weird.
Anyway. Yeah, it is. Yeah. So she calls the police and the first officer on the scene at the Hodgson House reports, and to my understanding, it's like actually on a police report, that she sees a chair slide 4 feet across the floor on its own.
Yeah. And like an armchair.
Then within a day or so, marbles and Lego bricks are being thrown about. Basically, the more attention that this family gets, the more the activity ramps up.
It's like red flag number one.
Right. And over time, it escalates to furniture being overturned, toys being thrown, banging noises, writing on the walls. Janet starts levitating. You know, the typical stuff. Things are bursting into flames. Janet's making like whistling, barking noises, and then she starts speaking in strange voices. And like I said earlier, a lot of this activity does center around Janet.
Yeah, she's the focus, or some might say the perpetrator of all of this. Okay, so things are escalating. The police are basically like, well, we can do fuck all for you, so I don't really know what we're doing here. And there might have been a little bit of like wishy-washiness of that officer who reported the sliding chair, because I think she's given a pretty hard time afterwards about having made that report. But the investigation starts shortly after, and we're just going to talk briefly about sort of the major players in the investigation of this whole incident. So Peggy, after the police can't really do anything, calls in reporters from the Daily Mirror to investigate, which is sort of a weird choice.
Okay. I'm like, why? I mean, I guess I go back to like, let's pretend that this is happening to you.
Yeah.
Who do you call?
I don't know.
Yeah, like it's probably.
Who are you going to call?
I set myself up for that.
Yeah, well, so yeah, so that's the way that I have heard it described, though, is that she's scared and doesn't know what's going on with her kids and doesn't know who to call. So a couple things that I read made it sound more like she called the Daily Mirror to just get like suggestions on who the heck she could talk to. Like she knew they had covered ghost stories before. And so she's like, well, can you just like give me some names of people I can call to help?
So I had even read that the police involved the Daily Mirror, which like,
yes,
that's pretty funny to me too.
Right, right. And so it's possible that like, you know, whoever calls the Daily Mirror, it's more just like they're sort of at a loss of like what to do. What and they think they might have some sort of connection. And of course, the Daily Mirror is like, sweet, this is definitely a story. We're going to go send a photographer and journalist out here. So a photographer and journalist go to the house and they spend several hours there and talking to the family, hanging out with the kids, waiting for something to happen. Nothing does. And then as they're about to leave, and like from what I understand, it's like they're like on their way out to the car, the photographer gets hit in the eye with a Lego brick. And apparently hard enough to like still have a mark days later. And I was like, okay.
You'd have to whip that so hard.
Right. Like, I'm sure it would hurt, but like, really, you still had a bruise days later from a Lego brick. Anyway, and my brain was like thinking about this earlier today. And I was like, did they check if like one of the kids had the slingshot or something? Like, how suspicious is that? They're about to leave.
Right.
Like, all of a sudden, Lego bricks are flying through the air.
Well, they're making the poltergeist angry by leaving.
Right. And again, I want to mention that they're living in this council or government housing, which apparently can be just like notoriously bad in the UK. Like they're just can be pretty crappy houses. And the reporter goes so far as to ask Peggy if she wants to move into a new house, because apparently people had in the past made claims that they were being like tormented by a ghost and that their council house was haunted because with the aim of being moved to a different house, like to a nicer house. So they were suspicious that this is what Peggy was trying to do.
And I had seen that too, but I'd actually read, I believe that she lived there, or I'd read anyway, that she had lived there up until she passed away. Like she stayed.
Yeah, what's funny is I thought I saw one thing that said that, and then I thought I saw another thing that said that somebody else moved into the house like shortly after. So I have actually no idea. How long they spent there. There's a little bit of, you get some conflicting evidence as you sort of sort through the details.
As you usually do with these stories.
Right. After the Lego brick incident, and after the photographer whose name is Graham Morris, he takes a series of photos that are pretty famous now of what is happening in the house. But the next people to get involved are investigators Morris Gross and Guy Lyon Playfair, which are some pretty great names, very great British names, from the Society for Psychical Research, which I feel like we've read about before, but I can't remember in what context.
Yeah, I don't know, but I think we have.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Yeah. So the SPR is a nonprofit in the UK, which was established all the way back in 1882 and aims to conduct scholarly research into supernatural occurrences. It's comprised of both believers and skeptics. And so I'm sure those are like some very interesting get-togethers when they're looking into things. It was established at the height of the spiritualism movement that was all the rage with the Victorians, and early in its history helped to expose many fraudulent mediums. So it sort of started as a good thing, and I would argue, you know, still is a good thing, because they are definitely taking a more skeptical approach, or like more methodical approach to looking into these things than a lot of other people, a lot of other clowns out there. A little bit about Playfair and Gross. So Playfair is an author and paranormal investigator. He's sort of seen as like the more analytical mind of the two of them. And he is the one who goes on to write a book about the events called This House is Haunted, The True Story of a Poltergeist. Gross, on the other hand, I guess was an inventor and became interested in the paranormal after he lost his daughter in a motorcycle accident. And this happened like not too long before the Enfield case. And her name, coincidentally, was also Janet.
Yeah. And they say that him losing his daughter is really what sparked his interest in the paranormal. So no bias going into this at all.
Yeah. I mean, you really feel for him, because I understand. Like, I understand wanting to sort of like grasp at anything to
feel sure.
Like you had a connection, and like, oh, then you get presented with this case of a little girl who is like seemingly upset and having, you know, these potentially scary things happen to her, and you have like sort of a chance to help her out. So it was probably pretty emotional for poor Morris.
But it's also important to note that, like Megan mentioned, this was all very recent. So like he was a brand new investigator, and this was like just shortly after losing his daughter. It's my understanding that, like I said, it's like one of his first cases. And you mentioned that he was an inventor, and he invented the rotating billboard, which I thought was super cool.
There you go.
Now we know.
Now we know who invented the rotating billboard. The same person who investigated the Enfield poltergeist case. That's a party fun fact.
Yeah, right.
To tell people.
Every time you see the rotating billboard, you'll know.
You'll think of poltergeist. You're welcome. Okay, so quick review of sort of like I don't know, the rest of this. What do they find? Who are the other people involved? Playfair and Gross spend months, like I think, you know, 14 to 18 months, whatever, recording and documenting things and spending time with the family. And I think they had a really good relationship with Janet and Margaret, the two daughters. And they very much believe that there are genuine phenomena happening in the house, which of course prompts Playfair to write his book. That said, it is important to recognize that Playfair admits to having doubts several times throughout the book. He does mention that they caught the girls faking some of the activity that was happening, but he and Gross maintain that most of the activity, some of the activity, not sure what his like qualification is on that, but was real. So basically he just says like there are things that he and Gross experienced and saw with their own eyes that couldn't have just been little girls pulling the wool over their eyes and playing tricks.
But do we know specifically like what those things are?
I guess without reading his book, I can't say for sure. And I feel like I didn't get any like clear answers to that in the various things that I read and looked at. So I don't know, which maybe tells you that like it's more vague than you would hope in the book, because I feel like if there was something very specific, like
it would be out there.
It would be easy to find it. Yeah. Right. So I do want to mention a couple other people from the SPR who got involved, namely Anita Gregory and John Beloff. They are two other members of the society and they review the evidence. I'm not sure if they visit the house or not, but they do not believe that what is happening is real. They think that Playfair and Gross have been tricked and, you know, are not, have not experienced anything real. And this like obviously causes a big rift with between Playfair and I think especially Anita Gregory. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely some bad blood there. Other key people to know are Milborn Christopher and Joe Nickel from the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. Both of them are stage musicians or illusionists. So they're like very well versed in, you know, tricking people right in front of their eyes. Christopher is able to visit the house and declares that it's just the girls playing tricks. Nickel has written about the subject extensively after the fact and is sort of like the Skeptical Inquirer magazine's like go-to guy when stuff comes up about the case. I mention them because they are an important source for a lot of the debunking that we will talk about. To sort of like wrap things up before we get to debunking, activity continues for about 18 months from 1977 to 1979, and then just sort of like drops off. A couple of sources mentioned that it ceased shortly after Janet returned from a hospital stay and like presumably like a psychiatric hospital stay, and that there was no activity while she was gone, which like, again, is a red flag.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess though, if we're saying that poltergeists are like attached to people, then I could see how they could say that would be evidence, but like the fact that it just stops.
Yeah, that it's just like, okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't know. I don't, it's suspicious. It's like very surprising going through all of this that, yeah, that Playfair and Gross were so convinced that this was real. And I listened to, surprise, surprise, the Monster Talk episode about this. And they got to interview Guy Lyon Playfair about his book. And like, he just seems like a sweet old man. So I don't know. I have some ideas for like why they may have been so predisposed to believe what was going on. So let's jump into the good stuff. So as you might imagine, and as we've alluded to, there's a lot here that points to this being a hoax perpetrated by Janet and likely also her sister, Margaret. And I mentioned this before, but you're sort of like, you're done listening about this. You just want to stop the podcast. Long story short, Janet, plus probably also Margaret, is angry that her parents split up and decides to get some attention and cause trouble. And for one reason or another, all of the adults go along with it. Slash, like, Janet is described as being a very bright, friendly little girl. So I, you know, can see her being very convincing in this role. And there are like a couple pictures of like the family that are out there, where it's like, you know, her sister and one of her brothers will like look very upset, but like Janet just looks like she's having a great time.
So. I have a question. Do we think that Peggy was, do we think Peggy really believed that anything was going on? I mean, I know that in like interviews and stuff, she's claiming to believe that something happened, but like, do we think that she thinks that her thought that her daughters were just messing with her?
So I was going to talk about this a little bit more later, but that's sort of one of my, that's sort of one of my things. I think initially for her to like, I genuinely believe Peggy when she says that she's not trying to get anything out of it. I don't think Peggy was seeking like fame or attention or anything like that. But I genuinely believe that she was like scared and worried for her kids.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Whether or not she believed it in the long term, I obviously can't say for sure, but like I am, my thought is like some of the adults may have just sort of been like playing along for the sake of the girls because they felt bad for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I feel like Peggy could definitely fall into that category of like, once they're in it and like all this investigation is happening, it's like, you know that your kids are already upset about their dad leaving. And it's like, then you're going to turn around and being like, well, you're a liar and like you're in big trouble now. And like, it just, I don't know. I could see it being easier to fool her because of that, into like her just believing that it was real, or her just sort of like turning a blind eye because of it.
No, that makes sense. Well, and not to mention, it's like once once that initial report is made, even if at some point like her feelings on it switched, it's like kind of hard, I would imagine, to go back and be like, oh, just kidding.
Right.
I was wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, when Playfair releases his book and when the Daily Mirror gets involved, they don't release the real names of the family. So I don't think those come out until later. So it's like people didn't necessarily know that it was them, but
it's not like they were in it for the fame.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I gotcha. All right. So first, we will address some specific pieces of evidence. There is some photo, video, and audio evidence from this case. Most notably is the famous levitating photo, which we don't have in the notes, but I'm assuming we will post some of these.
Yes. Yeah. We'll at least post a link to it in the show notes, and we'll probably post some pictures on our social media account so you guys can see these. But like, I guarantee that like, if you're familiar with Enfield at all,
the lead
photo in every article about it is like Janet
levitating,
quote unquote levitating.
So yeah, I see this photo, and even before we did this, thought like, she's just jumping on the bed,
right,
or jumping off the bed. And to no surprise to me anyway, the full sequence shows Janet is doing just that, just jumping off of the bed.
Yeah, if you like look at the full sequence of photos, it's like it looks more like she's just mid-jump. And like, God knows she committed to it. Like, she's making a face, but I think some people said that she was like in really athletic at school and like maybe involved in gymnastics. So it's like she could probably throw herself around if she wanted to and like be able to land safely afterwards. So yeah. So I'm sort of with you. This photo has never really been all that compelling to me, because I'm sure I could like take the same picture of my toddler like any day.
Right. Well, yeah, I might hurt myself doing it, but I think I could probably take that photo.
Are you sure you don't want to try?
I will. I will do it.
So there's like, I mean, I'm pretty sure there are like hundreds, if not like thousands of hours of audio tapes and various recordings of this. But most importantly, Janet was caught on video manually bending spoons and potentially manipulating other objects in her room when no one else was in there, but there was a video camera set up, like trying to bend metal pipes and stuff like that. She was caught playing other tricks like banging on the ceiling with a broom and hiding or moving the investigator's tape recorder around. And like Playfair and Gross were very much aware of this, that like the girls were sort of messing with them at the same time. And they sort of like, they play it off as like, oh, they're just being silly kids, like seeing what they can get away with. But it's like, how did that not make you just doubt all of it though?
Right.
That's what I can't get over.
No, I will say, I'm pretty impressed that a young girl could bend a spoon. I mean, I suppose it depends on the spoon, but...
Right. I mean, they're living in government housing, so I, like, am thinking maybe they didn't have the best quality spoons, so they maybe would have been pretty easy to bend.
Fair enough.
Like, I've got some shitty old spoons in my drawer that, like, I could definitely just, you know, very easily bend.
Fair enough.
Try to scoop ice cream with those bad boys. And yeah, it's just like,
good point.
This is bullshit.
It's suddenly, the handle of the spoon is like below the lip of the ice cream.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, you win.
Anyway, so yes, the other big red flag here in our sort of like debunking trip is that things get to the point, and I don't know if it like starts like this or if it like ends up like this, but it at least ends up that phenomena are only happening when people are out of the room or are turned away from Janet and her sister Margaret. And things never happen when Janet knows that she's being filmed. And of course, some people take this as evidence of like an extra intelligent poltergeist spirit. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's like, well, just they're faking it.
Right.
Like, really? It's just like,
why is the assumption that it's just a super intelligent?
Right. Like, oh, the ghost knows that we're here, so it's not going to perform for us. Like, we have to turn away. And it's like, or you're just turning away to like make it easier for them to fake what's going on. Specifically for me, this really calls into question one of the main pieces of evidence that people talk about, which is objects being thrown around the room. And it's like not so mysterious or compelling when you consider that it was like probably just thrown by a little girl behind your back. And if you happen to be watching Janet at the time, like, well, then it's Margaret.
Right.
Doing it. And there were some sources that talked about them saying that that Playfair and Gross restrained Janet or even like taped over her mouth, and you could like still hear this strange voice that was coming out of her, like, I don't know, this weird creepy growly voice that she was talking in. But again, I argue, like, could have been Margaret taking over. Like, she could have learned to, you know, be pretty good at ventriloquism, and the voice again gets to the point where it will only speak when the girls are in the room alone with the door locked.
Of course. So I have questions. So I had that, I was going to talk about that a little bit later too, yeah. But I'll talk about it now. I have questions about this taping of the mouth thing. Could a ventriloquist not still make the voice if their mouth was taped?
I don't know for sure how ventriloquism works. Or like where the sound is coming from, because I think it like it still has to come out of your mouth, I think. But like I guess the thing about the taping of the mouth and the they at one point say they like put water, they tape it and they like put water in her mouth as well, and it's
like that's just horrible.
Like one step away from like waterboarding.
Right. But, yeah, I was like pretty annoyed by this, but anyway.
I mean, what? Janet was probably having fun, so it's fine.
That's fair.
But like, I don't think that there's like video or audio evidence of that, because it probably falls under like, oh, the voice wouldn't happen like if we were filming. And it's like, well, okay. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I just don't understand ventriloquism enough to know, but I sort of feel like then like if you're like, why not just look at her mouth like when the voice is coming out. I don't understand the point of taping the mouth is my problem.
Right. Well, and I mean, that's the thing is like they brought in that ventriloquist to look at it.
Yeah.
Ventriloquism is the art of talking with the tongue and not moving the mouth or face.
Yeah. So, like, that's what I thought.
Still have to be able to like move their tongue and like talk without moving the rest of their mouth. So presumably, yes, like putting water in her mouth or taping her mouth would. Maybe not taping her mouth, but putting water in her mouth. Wadding her mouth,
yeah, sure. But the tape around the mouth, or the tape on the mouth, is the one that I was questioning. But I didn't, I guess I thought these were two separate things. I didn't realize they were putting water in her mouth and then taping her mouth, which is even worse to me. But anyway. Yeah.
Although even with the water in your mouth, like she could probably still make weird growling noises. So.
Right.
And the fact remains, like, I don't think that there's, like, there's physical evidence that
this even happened.
Of that.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyways, more about this strange voice that Janet speaks in. So we already talked a little bit about this, but ventriloquist Ray Allen is brought in and he attributes the voice to vocal trickery by Janet, which like no surprise there.
You're right. Again, we have another expert coming into the house and saying these girls are just fucking with you.
Right. So Janet slips in and out of it and like clearly sometimes forgets to put on the fake voice to have the ghost say things.
Yeah, for some reason, it's either playful or gross. I can't remember which one, but one of them says that this somehow makes it more compelling, like that she, but it's like, well, or it's just her like getting excited and sort of forgetting like, oh shit, I'm supposed to be doing this weird voice. So yeah, I don't know.
So this one, this sort of tickled me too. So some of the things the voice says is like kind of suspicious. So one of the voices is the ghost of Bill Wilkins, who used to live in the house, though it sounds like Janet was unaware of that.
Yeah, but like his son or something confirmed that he had lived in the house and died there before they moved in, so... Yeah.
Yes, Janet probably knew, but like supposedly she didn't. And this voice seems to change subjects frequently, which Janet had a tendency to do, and is also overly interested in menstruation, which is something an 11-year-old girl would definitely care about, but like not very many older men would really care about.
Right. And then one of the other things that really stuck with me that seemed particularly silly, but, and I actually listened to the recording of her saying this. It's like, how did you guys take this seriously? But at one point, this Bill Wilkins voice says, I'm invisible because I'm a G-H-O-S-T. It's like, this is an 11-year-old girl making this up. This is very silly.
Okay, here's another question I have about these poltergeist stories, situations. Is that like, I imagine that they probably have the vocabulary of a 12-year-old girl, not of a older gentleman.
Yes, yeah.
You know?
They say that, the phrases that the voice speaks in are like, are more like things that a young girl or Janet would say than a 72 or 82-year-old man, however old he was when he died. Yeah. So, it's very silly.
We don't like the voice.
We don't buy the voice. So more generally, though, there's a lot of other circumstantial evidence that points to this being a hoax. The Exorcist had just come out in 1973 and was obviously very popular. Amityville happened just a couple years earlier in 1975. So these types of paranormal phenomena, and I guess Amityville was thought to be a poltergeist as well, which I did not realize, but were well within the public eye at the time.
So another famous child poltergeist case, it actually centers around a boy named Matthew Manning, had happened in the 60s, and an article about him and the activity just happened to be found in the Hodgson house. A page had actually been torn out of a magazine. Of course, this could have been the mom or one of the kids reading up on it to try to understand their own situation better, but it is, it's a little sketch.
Yeah, it's a little weird. There's also stuff about like one of these like experts or whoever people visited the house and like mentioned that poltergeists like to set fires. And it's like, well, all of a sudden
it sets fires.
Boxes of matches are being set on fire. And Playfair and Gross like say like, well, if you can bark and whistle, like you can talk to us. And like all of a sudden the poltergeist can talk through Janet. So it's like they start like replicating things that they hear that the poltergeist should be doing. Importantly, many people who visited the house concluded that the activity was the result of trickery by Janet and Margaret. And this includes psychiatrists and doctors who interacted with them and would go on to tell Playfair and Gross that they believed that everything would stop if the investigators left and the girls just stopped getting attention. So again, we come back to the more attention they get, the worse it gets. Mm-hmm. And like the more motivated they are to keep it going. It's obviously very suspicious that people who are skeptical are kept away. And this is a quote from a Guardian article that sort of includes a quote from Playfair's book. But it says, Mrs. Harper, and Harper is the pseudonym that Playfair originally uses in the book rather than Hodgson, but made it very clear to Gross, who's the other investigator here, and I, that while we were welcome at any time, she did not want the others in her house again. And this was in the aftermath of a visit from doubters who thought the girls were playing up. So basically, people came who saying that this wasn't real and or saying that the girls were doing this themselves. And then the mom is like, no, no.
And Peggy's like, nah, get out of here.
Get out of my house. Like, you're not going to come in here and question my children. And, you know, she goes full mama bear, which I guess like to your question earlier, I think at some, you know, she's just trying to like do the best that she can for her kids and protect yeah. them in this situation. Okay. So one of the other sort of nails in this coffin is that Janet and Margaret admit to journalists that they were playing pranks. And apparently Playfair and Gross convinced them to retract their statement. Oof. And it's funny because I read this in a couple places and I tried to like find specifically when and where this had happened. Like, where, who did they make that statement to? Like, and the stuff about them retracting it. And I couldn't. So I couldn't really decide if that was like, I couldn't decide if that was a real thing that had happened or not.
I don't know, but that's a bad look on them if they tell them to retract it.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's like, it also seems a little bit weird because like Playfair does write in his book that like he knows the girls are like yeah. playing some pranks on them. So it's like, well, he was willing to admit that. So I don't know. And this is probably motivated though, like if it happened or like the fact that Playfair and Gross sort of maintain this whole thing that they believe the girls, they definitely get ridiculed by some for being duped by two little girls. Their situation, like they just seem really predisposed to believe that there's something real going on here. So it's like once they declare that it's real, A, they don't want to be embarrassed
right.
for being tricked by two little girls. Although to that I say, like kids are much smarter than we give them credit for. So, you know, just like don't feel bad about that. Gross, as we mentioned, is undoubtedly thinking of his deceased daughter and, you know, wants to believe and support Janet and her sister, Margaret. I also think that it's possible that they wanted to believe and were perhaps more likely to be fooled because they're nice guys and they're dealing with a family going through a tough time. They know the children are having a hard time with their dad leaving and like having to live in this potentially crappy house. It would be really hard to be the people in charge of investigating that and go into that house and accuse these sweet little girls of lying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like the same thing you're saying about Peggy. Like,
yeah,
they're kids. You do sort of want to protect them. And they're not right. really doing anything to harm anybody.
Right. Yeah. Like in a lot of ways, like it's not like the family got super wealthy off of this.
Right.
And you know, their names are kept as pseudonyms in the stuff that gets released. So it's like, I don't know. That's like
my only thing with that though is like he goes on to write a book about it.
Yeah.
I struggle with that a little bit. But like
yeah, so why wouldn't you just like let it go?
Just let it go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just sort of be like, yeah, okay, this is definitely happening, and then like not go on to make a big deal about it. Yeah. So final point that I wanted to make, but in 2011, at age 45, Janet was interviewed by the London Daily Mail. And she again admitted to faking some of the phenomena. She estimates about 2%. And she sort of plays it off as like her and her sister Margaret were just trying to see, you know, if they would get caught. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I feel like Yeah, that's funny. It's like if she admits that some of it was fake, then it's like all of it is called into question, right? Like it just sort of seems like a cop out to be able to say like, oh, well, you caught us on that one. It's like, well, that one we faked, but like the other ones
we didn't,
were real. Like it seems like a very childlike thing to do, like sort of test the limits of what you can get away with, so that way you know when, you know, you're doing the quote unquote real things, like how far you can go before people are going to get suspicious. So yeah. And I heard a really good point in another podcast. I can't remember which one it was I was listening to, but it was pointing out that like that's sort of the big thing for skeptics, right? If they admit some of the evidence is fake, like that's pretty much like, okay, write it off. We're done here. You know?
Well, I mean, that's like, yeah, that's true. Even like you think about like criminal cases, like if you admit to any of it. Yeah.
And like the point that was brought up though was like, if you have a scientist who is publishing really high profile data, but then like you find out that they fudged some of the data that they included, it's like, nope, their
don't care
entire
anymore.
Body of work is called into question. Like that's just how it works.
Right.
Like you can't, you know, they become an unreliable witness. So anyway, it's a whole thing. So that's sort of the last point that I wanted to be, is like they admitted that they were faking some of it. And like they also tried things of, you know, separating the girls and taking them to other locations. And it's like things would happen in those other locations, but like nothing would happen back at the Green Street house. So I don't know. I don't know if you write that off as like, well, the poltergeist is attached to the person, not the house, but who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, you already talked about, you know, some of the stories that had happened previously that maybe this one could have taken, I guess, some cues from. But I did want to mention that this story, and for that matter, this conversation, reminded me a lot of the Geier ghost that I had covered in our very first short and spooky episode. I don't know how much you remember about it, but like, like pretty much the entire thing, from like the activity that was going on to the media coverage and how the girls admitted to doing some of it, but not all of it. And it's just like,
yeah.
We basically ended up in the same spot then. And this had happened 50 years earlier. So just like another story that this could have taken.
Yeah.
Some...
Well, and that was also like a girl of about the same age, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and then you also like earlier than that, or maybe around the same time as Gyra, I'm not sure, but like the, you know, the Fox sisters who are pulling some shenanigans with the whole spiritualism seance stuff. Mm-hmm. So. Yep.
Janet and Margaret were just trying to find something to keep their little minds focused away from all the bad stuff going on in their life.
I think they had an entertaining 18 months
hanging out
with a couple of nice guys who gave them a lot of like positive father figure male attention for that amount of time.
Anything else you got to add?
That's it.
I think we did it.
We did it.
Thank you
to the listener who suggested this story. It was super fun to finally look into. And honestly, shocking we hadn't done it up until now, but whatever.
All right. Well, that wraps up our episode on the Enfield Poltergeist. Tune in for episode 47 when Sarah from Archaeological Fantasies podcast joins us to talk about the lost city of Atlantis. If you liked this episode, hit subscribe and share with a friend. You can find us on TikTok at Spooky Science, Twitter and Instagram at Spooky SciPod, Facebook at Spooky Science Sisters, and at our website, SpookyScienceSisters.com. If you have any questions about previous topics or ideas for future episodes, email us at SpookyScienceSisters@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening. Stay spooky and happy Halloween.
Spooky Science Sisters is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. For more information or to check out other shows, please visit evergreenpodcasts.com.
I'm Eliza, and I need you to listen to me. Have you ever felt so much that you don't know where to put it all? And you wonder if anyone would notice if you screamed? Because you want to. Scream for the ones they've hurt, the ones they've taken. Scream for yourself. These are my words, my story from my perspective. Because I know you'll hear other versions. Because I want you to have a chance to believe mine. Or at least hear it. If you're getting this, it's already over. But if one of you listens, really listens, it won't be for nothing.